And good evening, everybody, and welcome to Open Paddock Radio Live. Sean joining you as I always do this week. And with me, we've got a full house tonight. We've got Mike W. Welcome back, Mike.
Good evening, everyone. Work sucks.
He's new. We also have with us Doug as well. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Sean. Hello, Mike. Welcome back.
Thanks,
Doug. I got the unique pleasure of hanging out with Doug in a bar setting this weekend, and we actually talked motorsports the whole time at my going away.
So, well, it was awesome. Duh.
Yeah, of course, naturally. We had to take control. And then also joining us, we have, again, Kevin Neely is going to be with us this week, as this is the last show where I fly as captain of the seat, and then I will turn it over to Kevin for continuity purposes to be the new me. So hello, Kevin.
What up, yo?
See, he's catching on so quickly. Anyways, never mind. Anyways, so this evening, it is my last show until May. As most of you know, I am traveling to distances far, far away. And I'm going to be going, on my trip, as we previously talked about in weeks leading up to this. And next week, Kevin, the next time the show goes live, because we have some programming notes to talk about. But Kevin, on the podcast and in the live radio show, will be the lead guy. So that's awesome. So thanks, everybody, for having me be on the show. Granted, it is kind of my show, not really just mine. I mean, it's Mike and Doug, so I guess they collectively could have met. Basically, what I'm saying is they did meet in an emergency meeting, and I've been fired after I was told that my job was in no danger. So I have no idea what happened, but the board sees fit that they move in a separate direction than me running the show.
You did. You weren't fired. You resigned.
Yes. Well, I wasn't given many choices, but I'd like to thank the support of all the fans. But yeah. Anyway, so let's just do this right for the last show then, and then I will become a spectator like everybody else, and watch these guys drive it into the ground. I'm just kidding. They'll probably do much better than I will. Tonight, the drink of choice for myself is going to be Finlandia with OJ. What do you have, Mike?
Righteous Ale from Six Points Brewery.
Mm. Doug?
A little rye action.
I'm having a fine gin martini with New Amsterdam gin.
Ah, nice.
New Amsterdam on the cheap.
Yep. I'm drinking the cheap stuff.
And Kevin, how about yourself?
It is Bushmills on the Rocks tonight.
Oh, well done, sir. I suddenly have drink envy.
No. All right. Well, we could get into each fine piece of our alcoholic beverage. But that being said, we do have quite a bit to talk about in our motor racing show. We have some WRC news, some other rally news that we're going to get into. Formula One news, because we had a race at the Yas Marina Circuit in Abu Dhabi, a fantastic event. And then we have some IndyCar news, well, actually some Firestone Indy Lights news kind of thrown in there with some IndyCar stuff at the end as the plot discontinued. Well, it seems as though we finally reached a level of kind of, the storm surge has kind of receded a bit. And settle into our daily lives and realize that Randy Bernard will no longer be the CEO. But that's not a big deal because it's quiet.
Well, it's a big deal for Randy.
Not for him. I think he's probably more than happy to be gone travesty of a series. Anyway.
So, all right, well, let's get into it. And we'll talk about the WRC first. And I know we've got Oregon Wings in the chat room, so he'll be sure to keep me in line as we go through here.
And we do want to honor Mario's request. We are going to talk about the racing tonight. Because Mario seems to think it's bad to talk about politics. So we're going to talk about the racing. Mm-hmm. But since IndyCar doesn't have any racing right now, we're going to talk about other series that have other things in the news than politics.
Yes. Well, this is a wee bit of politics. Not a whole lot. Our first news comes from the WRC, and more importantly, Nasser Al-Attiyah. Head on over to openpaddock.net, and you can see Mike Shaw, or the aforementioned Oregon Wings, posted a great story up there about Nostralgia potentially making a move to save M-Sport from any kind of issues financially that they could have in the future. Now, as you know, obviously Ford is withdrawn from the WRC as a title sponsor. Their Ford Fiesta EcoBoost cars will still compete in the championship, but they don't have any massive sponsorship at the moment to really kind of keep the team going. Now, if you remember back during the Olympics, after Nastralatia won his bronze medal for, I think it was trap shooting.
Shooting things.
Shooting
cool.
Clay pigeons, doing a great job. There were some rumors that he wanted to buy Citroën, or the Citroën World Rally Sport team, in which he was kindly laughed off the stage and said, you know, I don't know if you heard, Nasser, but Citroën's not for sale, ever. So that being said, he kind of took a step back, but this weekend Nasser made a lot of noise with an interview with Colin Clark, actually, of Open Paddock fame, actually more of but he talked to us, so you know, we can throw that in there. But he had an interview with Nasser Al-Attiyah, and they discussed the prospect of Nasser basically is looking to buy M-Sport or put a lot of money into M-Sport to run a three-car team under the Qatar World Rally banner. So, and that being said, obviously we know that Qatar, or Qatar, however you want to say it, has a lot of money naturally. So he's not hurting for money. And a lot of those Middle Eastern kind of companies or countries have gotten behind M-Sport in the past. As you remember, just a couple of years ago when they ran the Ford Focus, they had the Abu Dhabi sponsorship. So, you know, it's not unheard of that, you know, the Middle East comes in and sponsors some cars. But Nasser wants to put some money into that team and potentially, I don't want to say buy it, but at least financially sustain it to where they could continue to run and perhaps develop the Ford Fiesta in the future. So, as Mike mentions, Abu Dhabi went to Citroën, and I can't really blame him because you want to go where the cars are winning, not mm-hmm. silly blunders. So just some interesting news there to keep an eye on. Not a lot of substance really at the moment, but there was Malcolm Wilson was seen in Cyprus, where the IRC ran their very last event of, as the IRC, they'll go to the European Rally Championship next year. But it was, in fact, Malcolm Wilson in Cyprus to talk perhaps with Nasser about helping out with M-Sport, and we'll see what happens. So keep that in mind. And speaking also of Nasser, he won the Cyprus Rally. So Andreas Mikkelsen had some issues, a couple punctures actually for Andreas Mikkelsen, who was obviously the class he is. However, he ran into a couple punctures through over the weekend, and that allowed Nasser Al-Attiyah to claim victory in the final round ever of the Intercontinental Rally Championship. So Andreas Mikkelsen wins the championship. And it's interesting to see where Andreas Mikkelsen will go, because he was with Volkswagen there. You know, he was doing a lot of the testing and running in the Skoda S2000 for Volkswagen. But now that Volkswagen has Sebastian Ogier and Jari-Matti Latvala, it's kind of like the third wheel going. So we'll definitely see what happens going forward with Andreas Mikkelsen. Obviously a huge talent. Many, 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 many people did very good job for Andreas and Skoda in the IRC. It's sad that championship is no longer existent, but they no longer have the ability to boast the kinds of numbers that they used to when they used to rub it in the WRC's face. So I think once the WRC started to get Volkswagen, Mini, and all those kind of people joining, I think it was pretty much over at that point. And a great point that Mike mentioned as well in the chat room here that was in the article was that that Andreas Mikkelsen's co-driver is leaving him as well. So all is not well in the world of Andreas as he's co-driverless. But he did let his co-driver drive the last stage and all the pace notes. So that's kind of cool. That'd be like me letting Doug drive on the last stage.
But you know, I would be fine with the driving. It would be it'd be my co-driver that I'd be worried about.
The sketchy pace notes. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I understand.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's what we have for Nasser Al-Attiyah. The WRC has went to a new timing provider, which this is kind of sad.
This has been an interesting story over the last year because the teams were not happy when Stage One was replaced.
Yeah, Stage One Technology, who used to do all of the timing and did a great job of all the timing for the WRC, will no longer be providing that timing. A new company, a new firm rather, Sistemas Integrales de Telecomunicación. My Spanish is not what it is, as you can tell.
You to say.
But it's they wanted Stage One to continue. However, given all of what's going on and the change that's happening with the World Rally Championship, that's just not going to be what's going to happen. So they're going to move to this what appears to be a Spanish timing company, and that's who's going to be doing all the work from now on. So, interesting stuff. And that actually coming from Autosport. So, Mike, that's from Autosport. let's see. Other news in the rally world is Robert Kubica. Robert Kubica, who, you know, we had the issues with the accident in the rally cars and the torn up hand, much documented, is going to make his competitive racing return in a WRC-winning Citroen. So Kubica is going to take part in two rallies in November, driving a WRC-winning Citroen C4. So this is all part of his rehabilitation. And it's also interesting because, as you remember, now that Jari Matti Latvala is gone, and Ford doesn't really know, or shall I say M-Sport, doesn't really know what they want to do, they're, you know, it could be the potential. I'm just going to throw it out there. That you could see somebody like Kubica take the controls. Yeah, and now he's starting to step up to faster kind of machinery, WRC level machinery as it was. So it would be potentially could go to the European Rally Championship. Not really sure exactly if that's the way it's going to be or not. But he also very well could be in the WRC totally. So
it worked for Kimi.
Kimi proved that you don't have to necessarily be good to drive rally.
Well, and Kimi returned to F1 after a stint in the rally championship, and it seemed to work okay for Kimi, at least this weekend. He only had to tell his team to shut the F up a few times.
That was awesome.
It really was.
Let's go to Yas Marina for the Formula One. Quite a bit of interesting stuff actually coming down from Formula One. We had Ferrari had actually broken their curfew twice to prep car with new updates. There was some leaking with the new parts, as there always is, with new pieces, and also perhaps some legality issues with the curfew. But please remember that teams are allowed to break curfew three times.
Four times.
Okay, four times during the course of a championship. And to my knowledge, Ferrari had not broke curfew. So
no, they had not up to this point. There was a question whether they could break curfew twice on the same weekend, though, and that was why they were referred to the stewards. And the stewards looked at the rule and said, though it may have been the intent of the rule, it is not worded that way.
It is not the letter of the law.
And I'm happy they went with the letter of the law, because the law has no spirit. It only has the letter.
As my wife, who was sworn in before the Ohio Supreme Court yesterday, can tell you, you are right, Doug.
Congratulations, by the way.
Absolutely. Dr. Wife.
It's been a crazy 4 years. So, yes, Dr. Wifey Esquire.
Let's see.
So, look out, y'all. We have proper legal counsel.
Yes, you cannot have clear. And you know what? Her retainer fee is Mike sleeping on the couch.
Wow.
So some interesting.
I'll just let you know, Kristen has agreed to represent Open Paddock as long as she's not representing you, Sean.
Oh, geez. What if it's a problem that I cause, because I the letter of me. I just kind of trek through the law.
Open Paddock files litigation against Sean Paddock or for violating 151C, bringing the website into disrepute.
Oh God, I've done that.
Nice. What is this, like the Open Paddock Concord Agreement or something?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go, Kev.
Something like that. Article 151C is when I bring a bottle of 151 to the podcast.
Oh, I remember that night. That was awesome.
151 was drinking a copious amount of alcohol in a 30-minute challenge fashion to where the podcast never aired.
I believe that was margaritas on your end there, John. The last episode.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Well, let's get back to racing here. There's, you know, I wish I would have sat down and got a compilation of all the stupid things I've said, which is a lot. So we probably wouldn't have had time on the podcast, or all the dumb things that we've done on the show through the first chapter of the show. So it's kind of interesting. When you look back on it, a lot of good times had on this show, and some of them, not all of the public has been made aware of, and never will, because I think I've lost the show. But that being said, so Ferrari breaks curfew twice, they're cleared of any wrongdoing, and then Sebastian Vettel and Red Bull had some really interesting situations come up in the middle of their qualifying, as Sebastian Vettel was excluded from qualifying after he did not make it back to the pits under his own power. He was told to pull over now, mm-hmm. as in this is not an option, pull over now. And stop the car. And the stewards determined that he did, in fact, break Article 6.6.2 of the FIA Formula One technical regulations, and the competitor was excluded from the qualifying results. And it was, and this is where it gets interesting, because there was two choices, like one of those choose-your-own-adventure novels.
You know, I always die in those.
I'm, right, me too. So what you're saying is my decision making is not sound. But yes, it's it was interesting because you have two ways that you can go about it. Either start at the back of the pack, and which the car is then in park for May, and you can't touch it for the rest of the night, or you can start from the pit road, which allows you to make changes to the cars all the way up until you allows you to make changes to the cars all the way up until it's time to grid, which is precisely what Red Bull did. And they actually did, and this is a bigger story that I'll get into once we get into a race. But they did make changes with the they took away a bit of downforce and added taller gear ratios so that the car had better
top end speed.
And speed, yeah, on that long straightaway there at Yas Marina. So, gentlemen, I'd like to hear your opinion on that. Good move, interesting move.
Well, certainly it made more sense coming through the pack to set up those gear ratios, because you knew that you were going to be doing a lot of passing. If you're set up from the for the race and planning on sprinting off into the lead like you would normally do, the downforce is a little more necessary in those instances because it allows him to set up those gaps, whereas this, he was trying to overtake those gaps.
Yeah. Kevin, what say you, sir?
You know, I think Adrian Newey uses a Ouija board to come up with his setups, and he's like channeling the ghosts of all these dead engineers, and they're telling him from the netherworld exactly the direction that the wind is going to flow over the cars, and it's Adrian Newey. I don't question anything that the man does.
Yeah, indeed.
I mean,
indeed.
If Adrian Newey walked in here and told me that I could regrow hair by pasting peanut butter on top of my head, I'd probably do it.
That's interesting.
Because, yeah, it's a theory at least.
Yeah, right.
It's a model.
He wouldn't recommend that because that would disturb the airflow.
Yeah, well, he would want you to just shave it super smooth.
He would tell you to use creamy instead of crunchy is what it is, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it made perfect sense. I don't, and it's honestly, it's a no-brainer, because why do you start, if you know that something's going to make a difference in the car, why would you even consider starting from Parc Formé instead of starting on pit road? Because you can go ahead and make those changes, and you're a step ahead of everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Set up what tires you want, more adequately prepare your strategy. Yeah, there's no comparison, so.
Yeah. Well, some other things to talk about, though, in qualifying. Qualifying being what it is. Lewis Hamilton took...
I thought you just skipped right over me.
Well, I'm saving you for another section.
Oh, okay. I see how it is.
So,
no, I didn't have anything to add anyway that...
I know you did. Yeah. I knew you did.
Anyway, qualifying. Yeah. Lewis Hamilton qualified on pole. He was the class of the field this weekend until things went clunk. We'll get that in the race coverage. Mark Webber qualified second. Sebastian Vettel qualified third, then 24th. that moved Pastor Maldonado up into third, Kimi Raikkonen into fourth, Jenson Button into fifth, and Fernando Alonso into sixth.
Yes, and Roman Grosjean in the ninth, in poised position to take out the whole entire top half of the field.
Nice,
because that's what he does. So, Roman, what do you say? What would you say it is you actually do here? Mm. Well, I crash the other cars so Kimi doesn't have to. So interesting qualifying. Kind of depressing qualifying for Michael Schumacher. His best, he could only do P14 his best. And that was really the only other real, like, holy cow head turner. So moving in, and Bruno Senna, I mean, that's just pathetic. Your teammate qualifies fourth in the Williams and you qualify 15th. That's just terrible. So,
hey, that's deserving of a race seat next year at Ferrari.
Yeah. There you go. there you have it. Well, as you mentioned, as we get into the race now, Hamilton had some issues. Hamilton, who was blindingly fast all weekend, and Martin Whitmarsh says, you know what, I was just kidding with you, boy. Push the red button. Beep. And there went the red button, and all kinds of problems would occur to one Lewis Hamilton's car, and he would actually DNF due to mechanical failure.
Yes.
So... a depressing run for Lewis as he...
It's almost like as soon as he signed that contract with Mercedes and made it known, his car hasn't finished like a race since then or something.
As I understand, McLaren hired some engineers from Hendrick Motorsports to build engines, and it's the same guys that built those 499-mile engines for Dale Jr. a few years ago.
Oh, the ones that had the bad C-rods or whatever in them?
Yeah, you know, it's the ones that would blow up at the most inopportune time.
Yeah.
That's not true, but it would be awesome if it was.
Indeed.
Nico Rosberg and... Narain Kittilitterin, as you call him, Mike, had a coming together, and Nico Rosberg got catapulted as he ran over the back of Karthikeyan, was it?
Yeah. Karthikeyan had total hydraulic failure and had no steering, so he was woeing down severely so he would not end up in the barrier. Unfortunately, Rosberg was right behind him at the same time, so it created... the launching pad of open wheel cars.
My question is why wasn't Rosberg given a 10 grid spot penalty?
Because he wasn't Schumacher, who's so old and senile in the car. Oh my God! Realize people in front of him are actually slowing down for corners.
Got a lot of balls saying that on the last show there, Mike. A lot of balls.
Yeah, well, no, you got a lot of balls being a Schumacher homer for as long as you have.
Oh, you've got to be shitting me. You are fired. You are fired on so many levels, it's ridiculous right now. Oh, how nice is that?
I just wonder if Rosberg got tower clearance for that flyby when he went flying right by Karthikeyan's head.
God.
Negative Ghost Rider, the pattern is full.
You know, it did make me think that, you know, as ugly as they are, maybe those little Kardashians on the back of the IndyCar aren't a bad idea.
Mm-mm.
But you know what, Doug? I still have yet to see a heavy incident where those things would have done much. Like in that incident where there's such a difference in speed, I don't think it would have mattered. I think it matters on the nudges, the cutting down a tire nudges. Yeah. I don't know, man.
You may be right, but we haven't seen that sort of thing yet.
Yeah, the rear wheel pods, the official name the IndyCar series has given those things.
That's a boring name.
Yeah, well.
when,
It's an interesting series with boring management.
Right? Okay.
With that hit, I don't even think the Kardashians would have helped because the tire really kind of caught more on the side pod than anything.
It did.
The scariest thing was seeing the fact that Karthikeyan's camera mount was completely sheared off.
Yeah. It's like, oh, crap, what just happened?
That's where they're supposed to pick up the car, and it just came right off.
Even better, did you see the look on Karthikeyan's face when he was talking to Rosberg after he got out of that car?
He's like, I was so going to die, man.
A little wild-eyed.
Yeah, I could imagine. Not Rosberg and Karthikeyan, not the only ones with issues, however, because we had Mark Webber and Romain Grosjean, who seemed fit to hit every car on the racetrack, and including Mark Webber, which is interesting because when you look at Mark Webber, Mark Webber doesn't usually hit many things. Mark Webber is a quiet driver, a good driver. He might not finish as well as he probably needs to for championships and all that, but he's a good driver who races clean and races respectfully, and that's always a good thing in Formula One. And man, he was hitting everything this weekend. Everything.
Yeah, indeed that. I mean, he was just he was not having the best race. His start in the race was Webber-esque.
Yeah.
Speaking of Webber starts, jeepers, man. What did he do? Throw a boat anchor out of that thing?
It's the same thing he does every time he starts. Yeah, that guy is complete garbage.
Yeah, he's never been really good at starting a Grand Prix. He starts on pole, and he always drifts back a couple of positions. I mean, I don't know what his problem is, but it's pretty ubiquitous. See it every race that he's up front.
Yeah, it's usually worth commenting on when he has a good start because it's so normal.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets on that starting line, he starts doing his mantras and his meditations, and he's channeling his inner anti-Alonso.
Yeah. It's like, come on,
Pawpaw, put it in gear, turn the turn signal off, and let's get going.
Yeah, right, exactly.
NHRA material, he is not.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, well, reaction time is not good.
As you see in the video on the screen there, he had a nice incident with Massa, where Massa slammed wheels with the lad, and then Webber went off course and came back on course. And right as he came back on course, Felipe Massa's car was just like, whee! And did a nice little spin. That was
Massa had an argument there for a little bit until he threw it away. Because his argument very much could have been, hey, he cut the chicane. How come he can go ahead?
Mm-hmm.
But then he spun.
Neutralized. Well, that he was kind of forced off the chicane because he was on the outside and Massa made firm wheel contact.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But anyways, that wouldn't be the last we'd see of Webber's accident because at the end, Webber would actually get involved in an accident, which the before-mentioned Romain Grosjean would be a part of. Grosjean's car would be they would spin, make some contact. All the cars kind of dive-bombed each other into the corner, and Mark Webber actually got collected in that accident and was taken out. But we had something in this race that we haven't quite seen at Abu Dhabi as much, and that was the number of safety cars. We had two safety cars in this race, which definitely played right into the hands of Vettel, because as you remember, Vettel was on a different tire strategy, and it was thought at first that potentially Vettel would try to go to the end of the race now on the super soft compound. Now, that wasn't the ideal strategy because the tires were going to be super worn, but it actually gave him a potential to win the Grand Prix. And then we move into the last safety car after the Webber incident where he was collected and Grosjean's in shambles. And, you know, there's a few cars and pieces all over the racetrack that came right after a Vettel pit stop when Vettel had dropped to fourth place. And that closes the field and now gives Vettel a chance to make a move to get up to third and, hell, maybe even win the thing if he's lucky. I don't think there was going to be any denying Kimi Raikkonen this weekend.
Yeah.
Driving like a man possessed.
Vettel had a chance, but then he stumbled across one Jensen Button.
Yeah, Jensen Button said, "You shall not pass." And it took quite a long time before Vettel finally got around Jensen Button to move into the final podium position behind Alonso. And this gets back to what I was talking about with qualifying. Kimi Raikkonen wins the race and Alonso finishes second. But I think the real story, aside of Kimi winning and that Lotus Renault winning, which shouldn't really come as a shock to us because we kind of knew it was going to happen at some point. I think that if we talked about this after maybe the first five races of the season, I think that we all were in agreement that Raikkonen was going to win a race at some point because the car was good. He was challenging. And was finishing very consistent. The Renault was one of the more consistent cars on the grid. But Vettel drove from last place to third place with the help of the safety cars and a couple key cars being crashed out. But I really think the story of the day goes to Sebastian Vettel because wrapping back to what I was saying in qualifying, you know, one of the things that Fernando Alonso said leading into the weekend, I think it was last race, he says, "I'm not really racing Vettel as much as I'm racing Newey." Well, I have to say this weekend that Alonso was kind of served a piece of humble pie. And I say this because the car was not the deciding factor in Vettel's performance per se, because that car is always known for Vettel's aerodynamic prowess. The car has such grip and such downforce, and it always makes its money. It's always made its money in the slower portions of the racetrack with its downforce because of Newey's brilliance. And then the Renault engine was always set at a super high RPM where they're getting more acceleration out of the car vice top end speed. This weekend, we've seen the car at more top end speed and less downforce, so kind of less Newey, if you will, because the downforce isn't working as much, and Vettel actually muscling the car into third place. I just think that this weekend was more about Vettel being a great driver and proving why he's on the cusp of becoming a 3-time champion. Obviously we still got a couple races, anything can happen. The margin's only 10 points, but Vettel muscled that car up to third place. Now, granted, is the Lotus Renault, or is the, not the Lotus Renault, but the Red Bull Renault a great car? Yes, it's a great car. It's a double championship winning car. But this weekend was less about Newey's design and more about Vettel taking what he had and moving it into third place on the podium with a little bit of help. But we've seen in any racing series that sometimes you have to be lucky. Now I know, Doug, you're not on the luck bandwagon, but when you have safety cars come out like they were, you know, you were put into a good position that you would not have been outside of your control.
That first safety car did not help Vettel, because the first safety car was when he further damaged his front wing when he had to swerve to avoid Daniel Ricciardo and took out the DRS sign and blew up the other side of his front wing. Yeah. Therefore, he had to pit and go back to the back of the pack again. I guess it would have been better for him to stay out if his wing wasn't damaged and pick up those points, those positions as soon as the track went green and the track was still bunched up. So the first safety car didn't help him. The second one came at just the right time, though, because he had just pitted under green, had made a gap in front of the people behind him so that he came out in fourth. And then the track went, car and bunched everything up again so that he was closer still and just was right behind Button. And Button did a valiant job. I really think Button did a wonderful job holding him off for as long as he did.
Mm-hmm. He did. He did, because there for a while, I didn't think that Vettel was going to get around Button. I mean, he was fighting Button every square inch of the way. And so it was interesting to see what happened. But again, it's one of those things where, you know, you just got to kind of push. And, you know, he was able to take advantage of a move and get around Button for third place. And now we had a Raikkonen, Alonso, Vettel podium for the finish of the race. And Kimi, speaking of Kimi, not to discount his drive, because it was utter brilliance after Hamilton DNF'd, but how funny was he How hilarious was he when his engineers get on the radio and say, Kimmy, okay, we need you to warm up all four tires, keep it warm, you know, brake traction and all that. And Kimmy's like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, please shut
up.
Did
they not realize this guy has won a world driving championship already?
Yeah.
They really sounded like they were talking to some noob.
Oh, I know, right? Well, no, you know, not everybody has to know that they... Go ahead.
They were talking to a driver. They're expecting the driver to want that information. Kimmy did not. Kimmy was not impressed. Kimmy's the guy that looks at reporters when they ask stupid questions and just makes them feel stupid.
And properly so. And you know,
just like he did to the chin. Just like he did to the chin on the freaking stage in front of the entire Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. He's
that
like,
was awesome.
Why? Why would you ask me that ridiculously dumb question? I bet this feels really good, Kimmy, huh? Yep.
No, it feels terrible. It's the worst feeling. This is the worst feeling that I've ever had in Dakar. I don't have any emotions to this win.
I would like to point out the fact that I do not enjoy winning.
I hate winning.
You bother me with interviews when I could be drinking vodka on that.
Yes, I want to go back to my fizzy fruit drink.
No, the information they were feeding Kimmy, it was not the detailed type of information that a world driving champion, a Formula One champion, would need. It was the type of information that you feed a driver that you're trying to keep focused and on task. Quite honestly, it's the type of information that you feed a noob. Or at least a rookie or minimally experienced Formula One driver. It's not something you feed to Kimmy. And I think the engineers just completely misunderstood the caliber of driver they were talking to, or the style of driver they were talking to.
I was listening to another show, too, and they brought up this fact, and I remember it, and it was hilarious. During this whole point in time when this is going on, and they're like, Kimmy, you need to warm your tires, and flabbity blue. He's driving in a dead straight line while everyone else is weaving back and forth.
Oh, yeah, he's just like, whatever. Yeah, I thought it was funny, because it always brings me back to Tropic Thunder, when Tom Cruise is on the teleconference with the director, you know? And they're talking, and all of a sudden, they're talking about trying to fix the actors in the movie, and basically, some old, the old sergeant or whatever that was in the room, he's like, I'll tell you where you can take your actors, and Tom Cruise, he always reminds me of, I instantly thought of this scene when Kimmy was talking to his team, because he's like, at the end, he's like, oh, he's like, you're a great American, your country owes you a huge debt. He's like, now shut the F up so I can do my job. And that's exactly what I thought when I heard Kimmy. He's like, I know what I'm doing. Shut up. And, you know, he's just like, just let me drive. And it was just hilarious. I laughed hysterically. Twitter universe imploded on itself when he said that. I mean, everybody was laughing hysterically. And, you know, because that's the Kimmy that we know and that we love. You know, shut up. Let me do my job. Less is more out of you. And we'll move on. So, wrapping up the finishing of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, though, Kimi Raikkonen does win for Lotus Renault, followed by Fernando Alonso and Ferrari. So, a good performance for Fernando, obviously doing everything that he needs to do to stay relevant in the championship. And then Sebastian Vettel with a monumental march from 24th to 3rd. Jenson Button finishing 4th. Pastor Maldonado is P5. Notable retirements, Charles Peake. Roman Grosjean, Mark Webber, Lewis Hamilton, Noreen Karthikeyan, Nico Rosberg, and Nico Hülkenberg. Fastest lap honors going to Sebastian Vettel, who set the fastest lap on the white flag lap. So great stuff out of Vettel. And I just want to say, you know, I know that a lot of people are tired tired of the Vettel dominance, or tired of Vettel winning. Or finishing, and they want to see somebody like Alonso win, who's a great driver and a great ambassador for Formula One. It's just one of those names that he's probably the best driver on the grid. But Vettel, I mean, we haven't seen dominance in Formula One from one driver and one team like this since the early 2000s when Schumacher and Ferrari were in stride. I mean, and I think this is kind of a lot of like what we need to talk about as well with, I think, also has reaching implications in a NASCAR. Now, no, I'm not saying that they're two one and the same, but, you know, a lot of people are tired of Johnson winning. A lot of people are tired of Vettel winning championships, Johnson winning championships. And my thought on the whole entire thing is, you know, it is very rare that we get into waters like this. It has been a long time, you know, a decade, since we've seen dominance in Formula One like this, to this magnitude, to this degree, that Sebastian Vettel and Red Bull Racing are bringing to the table. And the same in NASCAR with Jimmy Johnson and his Hendricks team. You know, we, especially in NASCAR, we have not seen domination from champions like this in a long time. And I think instead of hating on it and saying how ridiculous it is and how we don't want to watch it and how it makes the sport boring, I think it's one of those things where we should really just soak it in. I mean, you look at like Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. I mean, they were winning like every year. Michael Jordan was the greatest player to ever play the game of basketball, and people loved it. Why can't in racing, you know, when you have the best driver and the best car winning races and winning championships, why can't we just take a step back and soak that in and realize that we're getting into very rare water here instead of saying, oh, well, you know, this is dumb and this is boring. Well, you know, don't blame it on
the answer to that.
Well, don't blame it on Vettel and Red Bull is what I'm saying. Blame it on the other people who can't show up.
Don't blame it on Vettel and Red Bull, but I'll tell you the argument for it. Number one, you're arguing Bernie's line right now, and you sound like a troll.
I am not.
No. I am with Sean on this.
But go ahead.
However, go ahead. Hang on. Just let me make my point.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
One of the reasons that the NFL is as successful as they are is because of the parity they've created in the league with the way they set up the draft, the salary caps, and everything that allows for champions to rear their heads from unlikely corners of the league. And unlike, say, Major League Baseball in the United States, you have the potential for champions to come up from any division. Whereas in baseball, you know, if you're in the same division with the Yankees, you're screwed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, true. I mean, yeah, they are the ultimate team.
You know, yes, but. You know, we look and we see the Patriots or back in the day the Bills, you know, going to the Super Bowl again and again and again, even though they didn't win.
And losing.
But you know, you still have dynasties in Major
True.
League or you know in the National Football League, and you know, what Sean's analogy to the Bulls or. And I would go back a little further. You know, when I think of epic basketball games, I think of the matchups between the Boston Celtics with
Larry Bird,
Dale,
yes,
versus Magic Johnson and the Lakers. You know, if you weren't wearing green or purple and gold, then you weren't playing basketball in the NBA. That was it. But that was okay because the level at which those people played the game, the level at which Michael Johnson, Jordan, oh my God,
he was a good winner.
First in the Moss Pro to Indy, I was thinking of the USF 2000 driver. But anyway, the you know, Michael Jordan, or when you look at Schumacher when in his Ferrari days, you look at Vettel now in, you know, with Red Bull. What you're witnessing is absolute mastery of the sport. You're seeing a demonstration of skill and expertise that you're not going to get to see, you know, every single season. You know, so that the way I see it, we should feel ourselves lucky for getting to witness, especially this last race at Abu Dhabi, coming from the pit to podium. That was masterful. We should be happy that we got to see that.
All right, Mike, do you have a rebuttal?
No. I'm not arguing against the quality of the racing. The racing has been fantastic.
Oh yeah.
You know, The dominance, though, definitely can create a situation where people are not interested.
Yeah.
World Rally Championship is an example. Yeah. That is an extreme example. You've had 9 seasons of the same guy winning the championship, and people are tired. And in WRC, it's a different story, though, because you've got 9 seasons of one manufacturer doing the job right, and the rest of them just squandering the opportunity.
Yeah,
you
true.
And you've hit on the exact difference there, Loeb is, you know, Loeb stands alone, right? You know, but there were abundant mistakes as we've elucidated throughout this past season that Ford has just completely squandered, you know, stepped on their own junk. And
you look at this season in F1, though, and it's been all over the map. I think McLaren's had the quickest car. Mm. They just have not been consistent. Red Bull, Red Bull, towards the end of the season, has really turned it on. But earlier in the season, they were kind of all over the map with reliability issues and just not enough pace. Where Ferrari, for some reason, they've been able to wrestle that car, that ridiculously looking, bad looking, silly, that Lego monstrosity, they've been able to wrestle that race after race into finishing positions for points. And it's the only reason that they're anywhere near in the championship. It's because the misfortune of others that they've been able to put themselves where they have in the championship, and the skill of Alonso, at this point, you just can't question. This guy is one of the premier drivers that we've ever seen in Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
So, very cool.
One of the Kevin. Few that beat Schumacher in his prime.
Oh, true, yeah. Well, yeah, Alonso is. I mean, Alonso is phenomenal. I'm not taking anything away from him.
Yeah.
It's just that his team is not responding like Red Bull is responding, and that's his problem. That's Ferrari's problem, but that's what's hindering him.
Yeah, and they're blaming each other, and, you know, Domenicali's going, why haven't the updates been as good as they should be? And they've had all these wind tunnel issues and whatever, and they can blame it on whatever they want. Here's the blame. Adrian Newey is designing circles around you, Ferrari, and it's really easy by looking at your car to tell, theirs is a little more swoopy.
Yeah, true. Kevin, now I want to get your opinion on the matter before we move on to the next subject.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, you just don't question what Adrian Newey does. I mean, Ferrari, when I saw that step nose on the Ferrari this year, that was just,
direct from the Lego store.
I just can't get past the step noses. I'm sorry. It's just every time I think about when I first saw them this year, it looked ridiculous.
Yeah. And they'll be there next year, the step noses, except they'll have like
a vanity
plate over them.
True. So, all right. Well, it is what it is. Just a little opinion piece and banter this evening. So good stuff. Taking a look at the championship, though, going forward, the championship standings that we have are not quite up to date. However, I will say that Sebastian Vettel is leading Fernando Alonso by 10 points, and I do believe that Kimi Raikkonen is now 57 points. I think he's like 57 points back. That championship now really a two-horse race, I think mathematically a two-horse race between obviously Vettel and Alonso. So, and we now head to the Austin Grand Prix. Jeez, I don't know why I couldn't think of it. Head to the United States for the United States Grand Prix in Austin, Texas. So, you know, this is really kind of surreal, though, after, you know, given the way that we had pretty much rode off Austin, about a year ago, I think it was, we were just like, it's not going to happen. And now not only is it going to happen, but it's really the only hope of a United States race that we have as the New Jersey Grand Prix kind of has an issue.
Yeah, the New Jersey Grand Prix has an issue, and I can't say that this this most recent storm is going to help matters there. Very concerning, you know, from the continued status of the event when you've got calamity happening in New Jersey and far more important things that need to be taken care of. You can see how this may fall to the wayside and never happen.
The only thing I can think of is they would use it as a economic development catalyst, maybe, or redevelopment of land after being put to pot like it is. I mean,
yeah,
course,
I've
seen
the
area.
Like, okay.
Sorry.
No, I just have no idea how the Grand Prix area and the construction supposedly was already taking place. I have no idea how it was affected by Sandy. But
the good thing is it couldn't have been that far along.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you really have to think that the impact of the site is minimal. If it doesn't help the site by making it easier to clear off.
Yeah, that's a fair statement.
Yeah.
We all see how Homestead Speedway popped up after Hurricane Andrew.
North Cuba.
Oh my! I love Miami. Don't talk badly about it. It's my favorite.
No. That was just the Homestead. What was his name? NASCAR guy. Humpy Wheeler.
He
called Homestead North Cuba.
Nice. That's so jacked up. I love that place. I hate Humpy Wheeler. So anyways, let's see. Moving on to the next subject, we have, well, we talked about, last F1 topic, actually. Formula One, Eddie Cheever. You may know him as the terrible ABC commentator.
He did call out Scott Goodyear. The very first Indy 500 that he called for passing the pace car in 1995, and I thought that was brilliant. That was brilliant. Goodyear commented on something, and Cheever's like, well, at least he didn't pass the F1 race car or pace car.
Nice.
Oh.
Well, Ferrari is handing Formula One tests to their Italian Formula 3 champ, Riccardo Agostini, and runner-up Eddie Cheever. So they will be driving a Ferrari Formula One car for their young driver test.
Kind of cool. It's interesting to see Eddie Cheever's son is racing under the Italian flag. And kind of interesting. It's cool to see this happen. Hopefully it means good things for him in the future, though, because it seems like a very nationalistic pride sort of thing. The Italian F3 championship does not mean he's on his way to F1, but, you know, it's cool with the national pride that you give him a test.
Indeed, yes. I like that name, Riccardo Agostini.
And they raced at Vallelunga, and that is that's a cool name, too.
Yes, agreed. I agree. So so there's that bit of Formula One news. Now let's get into some of the Mazda Road Indy stuff. First we'll talk about, though, and I can talk about this because it doesn't involve any knowledge of Mazda Road Indy. We'll save that for Doug. Ballardi Auto Racing is having, starting on 11/20, now through the 20th. I wasn't reading the show note properly there. Now through the 20th of November, they are accepting canned non-perishable food Sheltering Wings, at Sheltering Wings on Twitter, for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you can take your donations to their race shop, 1187 East Northfield Drive, Suite G in Brownsburg. Brownsburg, Indiana. So our friends at Ballardi are trying to raise some food to help out folks over the winter months and especially over the holidays. So do us a favor, do them a favor, bring some canned or non-perishable food over to their shop, 1187 East Northfield Drive, Suite G in Brownsburg, to help benefit Sheltering Wings. So
yeah, I will actually be in Indiana this weekend, so
oh, proper.
Perhaps I will buy a few cans of food, and I will be heading probably to Indianapolis on Sunday to spend a little bit of the day in Indianapolis before I leave, just to go down there. I might even swing by the old racetrack.
You got to go down and see the museum at the very least, right?
Oh, at the very least, because they let veterans in for free. So it's like, hey, you know what? I'll go in there. So nice. I'd love to go.
But
in
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Be sure to
go down there. Be sure to take some canned goods down to.
Oh yeah, swing by Brownsburg and drop off some canned goods on my way to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
You can also be sure if you're stopping by the Speedway to wear some sort of witty T-shirt supporting Randy Bernard.
Oh yeah, right. I was gonna come into the Indy 500 Museum, and then the board voted me out of here. So, an emergency session. I can't go to the museum now.
Well, so. You know, if they really knew you.
Yeah, they're gonna walk in and be like, "Hey, who are you?" I'll be like, "Hey, you don't know me. I'm like one of a handful of people who still give a damn about your sport after what you've done."
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah yeah. Well, come on in. Would you like to interview for the job? Why yes. You know, let me tell you how big of a. Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, you know, Toss Carlson's making a push for the job right now.
Oh Lord.
Wow.
He's got him a Twitter campaign and a hashtag and everything.
Are you serious?
Who's that?
Dead serious. Toss Carlson.
Wow. And Mitt Romney wanted to be president, too. Hey, I've got to throw in some kind of election thing in here, because if I, you know,
oh,
it is election.
Oh, it's tied up now.
Yeah,
I've do 162.
Oh, yeah, see, CNN is so far behind.
Of course they are.
They say it's 158 to 147.
Well, they're a little bit more conservative, maybe.
Yeah.
Did you just say that?
Well, conservative, not that way. Not Fox News conservative.
Yeah, a different sense of the word conservative. The proper use.
Yeah, I started saying the proper use.
Anyway.
I know.
CNN just confirmed.
The Fox News.
CNN just, sorry.
Go ahead, Mike, you go first.
I'm the Fox News version of conservative. It's somebody who yells at everybody.
You're an idiot. You don't know anything. What? You called me to be on this show. You're an idiot. You don't know anything.
The only comment you're going to get is, I am conservative in my thought and my political standings and all that kind of stuff, but I don't watch Fox News because I can't stand listening to these people acting like they're
political
king of the world or something like that. I mean, these petty little dictators who just scream at people who they don't agree with.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
It's
anyway.
It's entertainment, right? It's all about selling
exactly
the ads.
That's what it is. Okay. So let's move on because we need to talk other things racing this evening.
Oh, don't tell me we're actually going to talk about IndyCar.
I don't know. I got a little bounce the road to Indy stuff first before we
go right ahead.
All right.
So. You know, speaking of our friends at Bilardi Auto Racing, their new Indy Lights driver, whom we got to speak with a while ago, Peter Dempsey, he's over in the UK racing for his father's team, Cliff Dempsey Racing, and was going after a record-breaking victory to try to have the most race wins in the Walter Hayes Trophy, the Formula Ford. Race there. Where were they this year? Silverstone. Racing for his fourth victory in the event. Unfortunately, it was not to be. He ended up tangling tires with Joey Foster, and they were fighting for the lead. Actually, they were 1 and 2. And they came together and unfortunately ended both of their days. But anyway, fun stuff. I'll try to get the press release posted here with some commentary before too long once I get this proposal that I'm supposed to have been working on over the weekend that I haven't yet written.
Nice.
But anyway, so I'll try to get that posted pretty soon. But yeah, Peter Dempsey is not satisfied with just kind of cooling his jets, having secured a ride for 2013. He's over He's over racing race cars over in England in Formula Ford, so good on him, even if it did end in tears.
All right, and what about, well, that's all we really have, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not much else happening in the Monster Road Indy right now. It's been pretty quiet. I think after the Thanksgiving break, we'll start to see a little flurry of driver announcements come. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen the schedule released for. I think Star Mazda is the only one that hasn't released their 2013 schedule. I think they still have their I know we posted the USF 2000 2013 schedule. Of course, Indy Lights posted theirs already. So I think we're just waiting on Star Mazda. I'm not sure what the holdup is, finalizing some things, but somewhere between Thanksgiving and the end of the year, I bet you we'll find out.
All right. Well, moving. Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to say I'm patiently waiting for the USAC schedule to come out because I'm having a hard time giving two craps about what IndyCar is doing next year.
Oh, nice. Here we go again.
Wait.
Go ahead.
USAC, they still have USAC?
They do have USAC. Interesting racing. I don't hear anything about politics in USAC. Actually, it's dang good racing. It's a lot of fun to watch. I watched some of the winged action from Charlotte this past weekend, and I'll tell you, I can't get into the winged cars. The winged cars, they're just glued to the track, and they sit there and they drive this little straight line through the corners, and it's like, why isn't the car sliding out and breaking loose, and why aren't they taking multiple lines over the track? And I couldn't handle it. I had to turn it off.
You know, the other thing that I like about the non-winged sprint cars is that it's easier to see the driver work in the car. They're
true.
Not hidden by the wing, right?
Are you kidding me?
No.
You're going on a tirade because the wing obscures your vision of a car, of a driver actually working the car. Is that what you just said?
Yes, I am.
Wow.
You
have now reached a whole nother level of holy shit
One of my favorite camera angles in rally isn't the one from the nose. It's the one from the back of the car where you see the driver, especially if they've got the little inset where you can see his feet. And so you can see the driver working as he's going through the course. That I love. And I tell you what, when I go to Valley Speedway, and they're in Green Valley, Missouri, and I'm watching those guys, especially the younger kids in the quarter midgets and the midgets, no wings. You just see right into the cage, right into the cockpit, and you can really see them working the wheel. I love that. I absolutely love it.
Hmm. All right. Anyways, you're fired.
I've really got to get
to. You don't have a proper appreciation for motorsport, Sean.
Oh, I do have a proper appreciation. I just don't care about I know that the drivers work. I don't have to see it every time. And if a wing obscures it, so be it.
Hmm. The wing obscures their talent.
So now I'm on board with that.
That too.
Wings in dirt sprint car racing, wings are for cheaters.
Oh wow, that's a bold statement. I don't have a dog in the fight, so I don't know. But that's
it is what it is. Anyway, let's move on to IndyCar.
Let's talk IndyCar because HVM. HVM said, yeah, we're going to go ahead and do some sports car. HVM Racing entered the FIA's World Endurance Championship, which is actually a really big deal. That's like a team going from IndyCar into Formula One, honestly.
Well, remember the pedigree of HVM, though. Keith Wiggins runs that operation, and before, Paul Stoddard was involved with that, and it was Minardi USA.
Yes. Well, truth.
And now HVM stands for Hardly Viable Motorsports.
Oh, nice. It has been, honestly, with
in IndyCar.
In IndyCar with the Lotus Lump in the back of that car, it was a tragedy all year.
And Count Keith Wiggins is one of those that was happy to see Randy go, and he had very good reasons. He is basically saying, hey, these other three teams were helped out of their Lotus contracts by IndyCar.
And we were
and And IndyCar wouldn't return our calls when we wanted to get out of the deal. And we still don't have closure because Lotus officially still is providing an engine next year. Officially. We know they're not. But they're bargaining with the series on the settlement is basically the best way of putting it. And HBM is still high and dry. I can understand why they're going into WEC. Why would you continue being involved in IndyCar?
Oh, yeah, and it was really funny. One of the things that Wiggins actually said in this article from Auto Week, he says, talking about the WEC, that's certainly a stable series and growing, which is a shot across the bow to IndyCar, naturally.
Yeah, WEC has great potential. IndyCar right now, I'm scared. Anyway.
Yeah, it's going to be a dark time, but yeah, we're waiting to see what happens exactly. The IndyCar program for HVM is on hold as they kind of work around the Lotus problem. They're not going to continue until that's dealt with. So they've and there's also talk of a potential ALMS program as well on the side. Mm-hmm. So they're talking about a parallel entry into the ALMS as well. So
it's a prototype challenge class, right?
I'm sorry?
Into the prototype challenge class.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, I think so. So not a proper LMP2, but into the LMPC class, I think, is where they're going. At least that's what Kurt and Kevin said on Trackside last week.
All right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Moving on to Marshall Pruitt, actually, in Speed Channel. Marshall...
The dean of open wheel racing in the United States of America right now.
Yeah, this guy, I'm telling you, it's really funny, Mike, because you and I remember a couple of years back used to make fun of this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Like hardcore. And Marshall has really stepped up and just been phenomenal with his riding. He released a 2-part series this last week that I just couldn't put down. I read the whole thing probably twice, 3 times. And it was the firing of Randy Bernard, a 2-part article spread across Speed Channel's website, speedtv.com. And it was actually phenomenal because it was pretty much Marshall taking everything that he knew about the situation from behind the scenes and what we and the public had seen kind of transpire. And he just kind of really put together why it was that Randy Bernard was fired. Or the reasons, the perceived reasons that there was such a split between the paddock and the leadership of the championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found the articles very interesting and very good because, say, for instance, one of the things they pointed out was, hey, Randy came in, he started doing all this promotion like crazy. He went nuts and gave away all these tickets for Las Vegas and promoted that thing to no end and started talking up, hey, if we don't get a 2.0 rating on this thing, then I'm not doing my job right and I'll leave. He was really high on this potential, possibly talking to guys like Travis Pastrana. Probably the only reason he didn't race in the Vegas race was because he, screwed himself up at X Games.
Yeah,
backside, broke his ankle, rodeo, but, cowboy, whatever thing.
Messed up his ankle.
Yeah. I think it was a 720. 720
during
flip.
The best trick.
Yeah, it was best trick, yep.
But anyway,
that would have been sick if he landed that.
Oh, yeah. It was
certainly
awesome.
Would have. But the people who ended up sick were his potential team in
NASCAR.
NASCAR.
Because like, what the hell?
Nobody to service.
Welcome to the world of Travis Pastrana.
Yeah, exactly. It is what it is. But, all of that went into that event. And the behind-the-scenes thing that you're aware of, because we talked about it on Open Paddock, was they maybe had 10,000 people show up, and they gave away 80,000 tickets for that race.
Yeah.
And the ratings were good, but you're not going to talk about it because it was really the people standing by going, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh, what's going to happen?
It was all the people saying, did he die? Did he live? Did he die? Did he live? Watching
there at the end.
Huh?
Yeah.
Let's be honest with why the ratings were so high. The ratings escalated over the afternoon.
Yeah, they wanted to know what was going to happen.
Right.
They wanted to know if he died or if he lived.
They weren't there at the beginning of the race because they were excited for the race.
No.
Is my point. The other thing is the people in the stands. There was nobody there. You gave away tickets. Gave them away. And no one showed up.
Yeah. And, you know, if you want to continue making a case from that one event, the way they came in, they rented the track, that set up an interesting new business model for IndyCar, that potentially they were going to go about doing this. And all these tracks start going, hey, we'd love you to do that here, but we're not going to pay any money to do it. You know, it unfortunately, that event devalued the ovals a bit because of the way it was promoted and done. So there's certainly some things that you can say right from the get-go that people had misgivings about Randy Bernard. But you know what? On the other side of that, we all know what we thought of Randy Bernard.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the problem is, too, it's like I have never seen someone that is a CEO of a sport have a fan following like Randy Bernard.
Yeah.
And the problem is the fans get so emotionally and personally attached to Randy that they don't want to comprehend that, hey, maybe everything's not sunshines and lollipops like we think it is. And when it comes time for the cheese to hit the sandwich, so to speak, then
what the hell does that even mean?
How do you make a grilled cheese, Sean?
Gee, don't ask me. Anyways, continue, sorry.
That's all right. When it comes that time, you know, it's like people don't want to accept that their guy could be at fault here. And as usual, you know, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. It's not all Randy's fault, but it's not all the owners and IMS's fault either. And like we discussed last week, you know, Randy came in with such braggadocio and just making these big, bold statements. He set himself up for failure.
Well, but the other side of it is a lot of people saw Randy Bernard and you know, say what you will about President Obama, one of the things that he was very masterful in doing in his in getting elected the first time around was he just gave people something to latch onto that was different than the previous administration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what Randy brought. There are a lot of people that said, hey, I'm coming back to IndyCar because Tony George is out and you've got a new guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I am not a Tony George fan by any means.
Yeah. So a change in administration made people interested. The fact that Randy came in and said, hey, tell me what you think. And he actually made himself available. That was entirely different than IndyCar had ever been up to that point. And then you go into and everybody's saying this. Hey, stop talking about what happened behind the scenes and stop talking about the politics. Look at how good the racing was this year. Well, why was the racing good this year? It's because Randy Bernard came in, and the first thing he did was turn around this idea that we're just going to push the new car off until, you know, 2082.
Right. Yeah,
so
I mean,
like you said, the truth is somewhere in the middle in all of this. And in my opinion and estimation, I think Randy Bernard was upset that he couldn't continue. But he knew he couldn't because he didn't have the backing of the owners. He didn't have, and this is, I think, key. I don't think he had the budget that he really needed to be able to market the series effectively.
Oh, no. And I think he knew that the solution to the oval problem is IndyCar promoting the races.
Mm-hmm.
And the sisters didn't want to let go of that kind of money.
Yeah. Well, they've been letting go of that kind of money under Tony George's regime.
And they had enough.
And they were sick of that. And so he came into a bad situation is what it was.
Really, the question is, if you gave him the kind of money IndyCar was giving away under the Tony George years, would he have been able to do better with it? Or the other side of that, have we fallen so far into irrelevance it really doesn't matter who you plug into that position or what group of people you plug into that position? Can you make a splash?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with how damaging the split really was. And people, I don't think people comprehend how damaging that actually was.
Well, and just like I mentioned before, how many people returned to IndyCar because Tony George was out and a new guy was in? Well, how many of those people have, you know, flamed on the message boards and the discussion threads after comments and such on articles saying, I'm out. There's no chance I'm interested in IndyCar anymore because this guy is the one who single-handedly turned this sport around. That's their opinion, but, you know, to some point, they may be true, because right now they're looking at it, they're like, it's just going back to business as usual.
And one problem, too, is I think Randy may have made himself too accessible.
That's a fair statement.
And, you know, one thing you've got to remember in any job that you're doing is you got to remember who signs your check.
Mm-hmm.
And the first question you have to ask when you start any job is, who's the boss?
And that's the thing. He thought he was answering to the board. And he said that, you know, my only concern is making the board happy. Well, in the end, the board was happy somewhat. Mm-hmm. The owners were the ones that forced the board to fire him.
Right. Yeah, it's a no-win situation for everyone. Randy screwed from the start because he can't do what he wants to do. And the owners are screwed because they've been promised these things and it's just not financially possible. Like, I'd just like to touch on something we haven't touched on yet that I thought was the most interesting from all the Marshall Pruitt articles. And that was how Randy had Continental Tire set up to be the new series sponsor and tire provider.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the dividing line with the drivers, so to speak. And it sounds like once he lost the drivers, then he lost everything.
Yeah, I will go on record as saying I don't understand this at all. Because, you know, the team owners have gone on record saying that they're disgusted with this, the price of the spare parts.
Thank you. Okay. I was going to get into this. Thank you.
They're disgusted with the price of the spare parts. And you know, according to guys like Kurt Cavan, they're guessing that the team owners may, at the end of the year, spend somewhere around $100,000 extra on parts. That's after getting a chassis that's $385,000. Some people said that was higher than $385,000, but we've never seen the actual price of the chassis. And at this point, we're still going with $385,000 because nobody's told us any different. Other than Marshall Pruitt said it may have been $200,000 more than that. So anyway, the tire bill that they used to pay for Firestone was $300,000. Firestone was no longer happy subsidizing the price of those tires. They wanted out. Bridgestone wanted out of F1. Firestone wanted out of IndyCar. But the IndyCar series, idiots that they are, and their super bargaining power, we really want you back. What would it cost? Oh, how about we double the price of the tires? Would that work? Sure, come on back.
No problem.
Now the team owners are all upset that the guy who runs the series, who you've been complaining to about the cost of spare parts and everything else, he's come up with a better option for tires and somebody who's not only going to be your tire provider for free for some reports, they're also going to be the series sponsor.
Yeah,
want nothing to do with it.
And that's a great point. That's exactly something I was thinking about when I was reading through those articles. I was like, wait, why are they bitching about Continental when they're already bitching about the price of the Firestone tires going
up? Yeah, well, and it comes down to that for some reason nobody believes that anybody else other than Firestone can make a tire that runs at Indianapolis. And I guess the thing they have on their side is Goodyear couldn't, and Michelin couldn't.
Yeah. Well, okay. Hang on. Goodyear made race tires for the Indianapolis 500 for years.
Yeah.
Okay? Just because now they can't make a stock car tire that holds together worth a crap, that's separate from the good work that they did back in the 70s and 80s and into the early 90s, I think, if I remember right. They had fantastic tires. We never had a tire issue. The Michelin thing could have been solved, but Bernie refused. So I lay that at the feet of Bernie Eccleston as much as I do at the feet of Michelin. So, yes, I absolutely agree with you, Mike, that you could bring in somebody else that could effectively make a tire capable of running at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. However, Firestone does have the preponderance of data. They have mad amounts of data and expertise at doing this.
That's fair. But if you brought in somebody to be the tire provider in 2014, it would be the time frame they're talking about. They have all of 2013 to test their tires and get it right. Yeah,
I think a proper tire manufacturer could come up to speed. Yes.
Yeah, and you're talking about Continental. Continental runs in Grand Am. They have a partnership with Hoosier, and that would be used to make the IndyCar tires. And Hoosier seems to know something about racing tires. It seems like they're
especially
on every
oval.
On every freaking grassroots car on the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're even at the local autocross races.
Yep. True statement.
So,
I hate to cut it short, boys, but we only have 5 minutes left in the show.
No.
Yeah, I know. It's when, you know, time goes by when you're having fun. So we have a couple other things that we could have talked about. Mario Andretti had some interesting things talking about too much is being made about the politics. We need to focus on that IndyCar has arrived at a really good point now this season, and I think was one of the best in memory. And Mike, you brought up a good point. Don't really make a lot of sense as the season. If it was one of the best in decades, why are the owners so quick to force out the guy who made it possible, really in the first place? So, you know, definitely some good points. And there's a great point from Patrick from Trackside Online, great source of your open wheel IndyCar news. He says, and here is where I will likely get in trouble. The reason Randy lost the owner's confidence is because Randy made the same mistake everyone involved in open wheel racing over the past several decades has made. And that mistake is he believed that most people involved in open wheel racing truly have the best interest of open wheel racing at heart. That is 100% false. They do not. And that's a true statement, is it not?
Yeah. And reading the rest of Patrick's statements, very harsh on the owners and IndyCar, because it really lays it out. This is ridiculous crap is really what he's saying. Jeff Belskis came out with an open letter to the fans after basically he was forced to, as it, you know, they didn't, I don't think they expected speed the harsh treatment from the fans that they got. So days after Randy Bernard was fired and days after the fans were lighting up the message boards and the comment threads and everything like that, comes out and he said, oh, it's because you fans, you know, without your eyes watching our races and social media reminders and da-da-da-da-da, your financial sacrifices to travel and purchase tickets, without you, we would not succeed. Okay, it doesn't ring true. It's a mea culpa that doesn't ring true. If the fans are the most important consideration, the fans were being listened to, the racing was good, then why are you now ignoring the fans?
Yeah.
So if the fans are the most important thing, and you look at Trackside Online, they say the same thing. The fans are the most important thing. We have to cater to the fans or else we're going to lose it all. Jeff Belskis says we have to cater to the fans or we're going to lose it all. The owners come out there and say we have to cater to the fans. We're going to lose it all. Let's not talk about politics. Let's not talk about, you know, anything else. Let's just talk about how good the racing was. Well, we are talking about how good the racing was, and there's a reason that racing got better over the last few years, because things were changed. The status quo was changed, and they did things they hadn't tried before.
Yeah, that's a very true statement. A very good, very true statement, and a good thing to really wrap up the show on, boys. It's been a pleasure tonight, as it always is, both all three, Mike, Doug, and Kevin. I want to say thanks to JD Webb for running the show for us tonight. Again, we were running alongside the iRacing NASCAR Pro Championship. Always a tough show to run alongside. But we want to say thanks to everybody who was tuned in and listening. Also want to say thank you, everybody, for making the first, 162 episodes of the show just a real treat for me. I've had so much fun doing the show. I will be back in May to do the show and pick up. And, you know, you haven't heard the last of me. I'll make sure to stay in touch. I'm going to try to get together an interview with Colin Clark from the WRC before I depart. He told me that he wants to come back on the show. I want to talk to Colin before I leave and talk rally. So, you know, definitely, everybody, please keep tuned. Kevin, I have all the faith in the world that you're going to be able to do a fine job. And hell, who knows, when I come back, people might not want me to come back on the show if you do too good. So, but I want to say thanks, honestly, to everybody. Thank you, JD, for making this show a live streaming event. I mean, that was always one of my dreams for the show. And thanks, Mike, and thanks, Doug, for putting up with my antics. And it's always been fun. And, you know, like I said, I'll be in touch. And once I get out there, I'll be writing a lot more about Formula One as we get ready for 2013. And I will still be involved with all the things that are going on in terms of the 2013 revamp. So with that, I want to say goodnight. I will talk to everybody very soon. I'll still be on Twitter and on the webpage. So everybody be safe. I'll be safe. And boys, you keep doing the show. And I can't wait to download it and listen to it every week. So
we'll do our best, man.
Sweet. We're going to miss you, Sean.
All right. Well, everybody.
Take it easy. We'll be praying for you, buddy.
Always, man. And I will say for the last time, for at least 6 months, thank you for listening to the show. One quick programming note before we get kicked off, if we haven't already, and that's okay because we got a podcast, is that the show will not be live for a couple weeks. We got our producer having a couple issues, personal issues, so it's going to be hard. They cannot stream both the Drivers' World Championship and this show through one guy, so it takes two guys to do both shows. So that being said, we will have the podcast up, and the podcast will be done like it used to be, and then we will come back live before long. So thanks so much, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. Have a safe week, and yep, keep on keeping on.